Okay, this has gotten very confusing because I'm not sure exactly what segments are going to be in this week's podcast. I'm trying to piece it together, and we're recording really late.
In pieces.
In pieces, and we've been interrupted a lot. We've broken up.
Yeah.
No, we didn't break up.
No.
I actually have a beverage, which I never do either. I have coconut milk, hot chocolate.
Yeah, I started mixing drinks, coconut milk and cocoa.
Yeah. Oh, man. So this is a topic that we have kicked around a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't think we've unpacked it even together very much.
No, but you have gone on some great rants about it that I've heard. Just, you know, here's the thing, if you're listening. Grace and I, like, every, like, argument and debate and topic we've put onto the podcast,
yeah,
for every one of those, there's, like, three that we just...
We have our own
discussion, and they're not much different. Like,
no.
We're talking politics when the kids are finally asleep. You know, 1 a.m. and I have to get up.
Or breakfast.
And I have to get up at 7 and, you know, we're exhausted. Mm-hmm. We argue politics.
Yeah, you know, keeps a marriage healthy.
Or at breakfast when I frantically need to get out the door because I'm really late for work. We're talking politics instead.
Stick your head back in the door. Wait, this just one other thing.
One other point I have to make.
Before I can leave.
Yes.
Yeah, like that.
So, but anyway, so this is a topic... why don't you introduce it, because I'm just wasting time here.
That's fine. Not the time wasting, but I'll introduce it. So there's a trio of schools in Ypsilanti, Michigan, that are on the International Baccalaureate, or IB, track. Mm-hmm. The oldest of them is called Y High, which is short for Washtenaw International High School. And then there's WIMA, Washtenaw International Middle Academy. And then there's YIES, Ypsilanti International Elementary School.
Ypsilanti starts with a Y, with the area.
Y-I-E-S.
Yeah.
and the deal is that the high school is an IB, or International Baccalaureate High School. And it is run by the county. And the county rents a school building from the Ypsilanti Community Schools. And the Ypsilanti Community Schools said, hey, this high school, people love this high school. And this school building is not full. And we could develop a middle school program that's a feeder school for the high school for our students. And it would be... a significant value to Ypsilanti students.
Yep.
And so they did. And so it was extremely popular. And so they said, hey, let's develop an elementary school so we have a K-12 system, mm-hmm, that's robust and supported here in the community and available to Ypsilanti students.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Sounds great. And I'm not even a public school advocate, and I think it's good. And this is what the Ypsilanti Community Schools decided to do with their tax dollars. And frankly, I am not intimately familiar with the development of Y High, the high school. I do know that it is located in a building they're renting from the Ypsilanti Community Schools that's in a very, that's in the black neighborhood. And, it's in the hood.
There are a couple black neighborhoods in Ypsi.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a black housing area, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
we haven't lived here that long, and we're not in downtown.
No,
at all.
We're on the sticks.
So we don't really know what that will
look like. but I will say this much. The middle school, WIMA, and the elementary school, YIES, were... funded, developed, and made possible by Ypsilanti Community Schools and Ypsilanti tax dollars. They built those high schools, they built the middle school and the elementary school from the ground up to try and rescue their school system, which is falling apart at, mm-hmm, the seams.
Yeah.
For lots of legacy reasons that I'm not going to unpack here and now. But their school system's falling apart. This is their effort to rescue it, and it's working. Yay! Woo! Ah! Now, interestingly enough, it seems that, and I'm just going to say it, I don't think this is true. People keep saying this. Yeah. I don't think this is true. No one's showing me, I've not seen anywhere, how it's true. But the county keeps saying that to get certified as an international IB school, that the middle school and the high school have to be the same entity.
They have to corporate entity.
They have to be the same corporate entity. They have to have the same administrative body and the same staff. And that it's more, that in order to qualify, they have to do this, and it's more efficient that way. And so they said they approached this. So the county approached the Ypsilanti Community Schools and said, "Hey, why don't we merge the middle school and the high school? They're in the same building anyway." And we'll merge staff and everything, and it'll be good. And Ypsilanti is like, okay, so what would that look like? How would that merger take place? And the county says, well, we would take it over. And they're like, wait, what? Like, can you write that down? I'm just wondering.
That's an acquisition. That's an acquisition, not a merger,
right? And so this conversation's unfolding and happening. And the most recent thing is that in October, the board voted 4-2 to go forward with this quote-unquote merger. And the board president and one other person, another dissenting vote, was like, you know, we actually haven't seen much documentation for any of this.
Yeah.
I suppose we can move forward with it. And the vote carried, but we actually don't have anything to explain.
We don't have a proposal.
We have a proposal, but it's actually very vague.
Yeah.
Right? And again, I have to be clear.
It's lacking a lot of detail.
I don't fully intend to call them bald-faced liars. But I think they may have a misunderstanding if they honestly believe that it's required. Because you can have an international baccalaureate high school that has no middle school.
Sure.
So I'm not sure how there's this thing that it's required that the middle school and the high school have to be the same entity in order to be an IB school.
Yeah.
I don't think that's accurate.
I'm not an expert on that subject.
So. You know what? And I will confess, I am not actually an expert on that subject myself. But I have heard of this before and read about it before. Yeah. And
it sounds a little dicey.
That sounds dicey. It sounds like somebody's misinformed in some way.
Or they have an extra agenda. Anyway.
No. Do you think people are gambling in this establishment?
I was just bragging about how I got through the whole last segment without coughing. But anyway,
here we are. Go on. So anyway, so that's where it's at right now. They've taken a formal vote to move forward with a merger. And now, mind you, the city concerns, Ypsilanti's concerns are that the middle school right now, as an Ypsilanti community school, is populated mostly with Ypsilanti students.
Go figure.
Go figure. And that if they hand it over to the county, then it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Right? And then that there would necessarily be Ypsilanti students displaced from this middle school. And then the other issue is that the county showed no interest in the elementary school. However, and people typically don't want to bus their elementary school students. No one likes that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we can talk about busing separately, but historically, no one's liked busing elementary school students.
And didn't like being bused.
And didn't like being bused as elementary school. Right. So that aside, the other nice thing is that Yais was literally a feeder for WEMA, that every student that went to the elementary school had a slot guaranteed for them in the middle school.
Yeah, whether they took advantage of it or not.
Or not is another thing, but there's a spot for them. Once they enter kindergarten, there's a spot for them through the end of middle school. And the understanding and the expectation and what had been developing was that all the middle school students would then also have a spot in the high school.
Sounds good.
Sounds all good. Now, with this shift. Now, here's the other thing. I would feel it was much more benign, except they started threatening them when they said, like, wait, what do you mean, like, acquisition, not merger? What is that? What are you talking about? And they're mm-hmm. like, well, you know, we could move to Selene. I'm just saying. I'm just putting that out there. You know, we could just take the whole thing. We could take our ball and go home. Then what are you going to do? You know? So with the threat on the table that they would move the high school and lose the city would lose this lease.
Yeah.
They'd move the high school to Selene. And then they're just sitting there with the middle school and the elementary school and no high school for those students to move to.
It's not a part of a feeder.
It's not part of a feeder system anymore. Now they've got this hole in their system. And again, they've got to rebuild the high school from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
So either they give away the middle school they've built.
Yeah.
Or they build a high school. Right? And when I say build, I don't mean to build the physical infrastructure. I mean all the curriculum and staffing and administrative pieces to bring a school into existence.
They have a building.
They have Ypsilanti's swimming in buildings.
Yeah.
They're trying to rent all these buildings out. It's not about building
a space.
They got plenty of space. It's about I want to call it soft infrastructure of all the people and the administration
Shouldn't overlook how expensive and how long it takes to build up a good staff and a good team and group.
No, it's
that's where
it's years
companies think they can just move. They think their location is fungible.
No,
it's not. It never is, and neither is their staff. You know,
not at all.
Just like having a bad staff can doom a team. Even one bad person can doom a team. Having a couple, you know, a few really good players can guarantee that the team works.
Right. So either they give up the middle school they built, or they build a high school to ensure this continuity for their students.
Yeah.
So now it seems like, now that the proposal's actually like taking shape on paper,
mm-hmm.
so first off, they actually do want to move both the high school and the middle school to another location in Ypsilanti, in the white part of town. so actually they want to do that right away.
Yeah, and, someone's going to have to. Some students are going to have to be disrupted. However, this plan happens.
And you know, there's plenty of space in these buildings. There should be plenty of space for all the Ypsilanti students that want to attend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, that's not actually the same as a guaranteed space.
Right.
So the rhetorical frame has shifted to, well, there's like space in the building if they want to go there, right?
Mm-hmm.
From, we are building
guaranteed
this school
a slot from guaranteed
with a slot, a guaranteed slot for any student in Ypsi that wants to attend.
Mm-hmm.
Any student in Ypsi who's in the feeder system has a spot in the system.
Yes, yeah.
That's different than there's space in the building for you. I suppose I could go sit there in the building if I wanted to, right? But it's kind of this sort of doe-eyed. Well, yeah, there's space for it. You know. Yeah. I don't know why they're concerned. Why this is a thing. But the other reality is that now sort of leaves the elementary school orphaned.
Mm-hmm.
And what it also means that if it's a county school is that the county gets those dollars, 95% of them, and the Ypsilanti Community Schools does not. Only gets 5% of the dollars for the students of their homes that are coming from their district to the county school. So wherever they go, you're right. It's whether it's in Selene or whether it's here, it's a shift in funding for Ypsilanti.
Yeah,
they still have a lease on one of their buildings, right? Mm. And that doesn't go away, but it's a net loss for the Ypsilanti community.
Yes,
for the city specifically.
And Ypsilanti is not in a position to absorb a lot more losses.
Ypsilanti is not in a position to sustain any losses.
No. They're overstuffed with low-income residents who have fled from the places they can't afford to live.
Yeah.
And as a result, they have a problem with their tax base.
Yeah.
Which is now a structural problem.
It's a structural problem.
Yeah.
And it's deeper than that. And there's all these sort of really basic infrastructure mandates that it's the city's job to take care of.
Yeah.
And they have to pay for that somehow.
Right.
And the way they pay for that is tax dollars. I mean, and that's why this international village thing, mm-hmm. this other thing.
Yes.
It's a very international theme going on here. But anyway.
Right.
Was it a boondoggle?
Yeah, we should mention the latest reports we've heard, latest news stories about that international village are that it's not happening, that they the person who claimed to be the real estate
developer
isn't really qualified and can't do what she claims, can't deliver. So who
knows what else is going to fall.
Seems like that's sort of just falling into obscurity.
Right. Which, and honestly,
it richly deserved to do.
Yeah, I think Ipsy's dodged a bullet.
Yes.
But anyway, there are lots of structural financial problems that the city's trying to mount. And one of them is the sort of chicken and egg problem of a school system if you don't have a good school system, people don't want to live there.
Yeah.
But if people don't live there, you can't build a good school system.
Right.
And so they're constantly trying to crack this nut of having a stable, functional, populated K-12 school system.
The idea being that people who actually are high enough income to have a choice where they live won't automatically avoid it in favor of Ann Arbor schools.
Or Saline or wherever.
Yeah.
Or even Milan, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Right. So that's been a nut that the city's been trying to crack. And now it looks like their elementary school that they just opened it, that this is like its second year, and it's doubled their student body in this first year. And like, so from year one to year two, boom, it's really growing. And now it's kind of orphaned without a K-12 track to move the children through.
And people don't want to put their kids in a school that doesn't have a clear path to the next grade.
Right.
Because, you know,
it's
for one reason, they develop friendships, right? And then they're all going to be scattered. Nobody knows if they're going to be together in future years.
Right. It's very disruptive. And, it's the situation that Ypsilanti's got here, where they're trying to cobble this together. And so the county's kind of basically swooped in and taken all of their strategic planning, mm-hmm. all of their dollars that they've invested, when it's a significant investment to get this off the ground. And they're just taking it. I don't think they're actually going to pay them for it. The guy's just going to take it.
That seems wrong somehow.
And let's be very clear here.
Yeah.
When the county takes it, the racial makeup of the student body is going to change.
Yes. Yeah.
And there are certain racial groups that will be losers in this transfer, and there will be other racial groups that are winners.
So will the wealthy white students be losing out? Just
no,
not really.
No,
that's.
I know. I was shocked too. I too was shocked by this revelation.
Gambling here,
here. Like amongst us.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, all this said, there are racial, but that part of it is actually, we like to pretend that's not happening.
Yes.
And when anyone mentions that there's this disparity, right?
Yeah.
That Yais and Wema are majority black schools.
Uh-huh.
And that Waihai, is majority white.
Yeah.
I mean, there are students of a variety of ethnic backgrounds at Waihai.
Mm-hmm.
And all the white parents describe it as integrated.
Meaning it's about 10% black, right?
Meaning it's about 20% non-white.
Okay.
Really. And please correct me on my percentages if I'm...
I don't know. I'm just guessing. So if white parents described it as well integrated, it would be like...
there are a couple of non-black kids in the room, right?
Yeah, it would be like...
Or a couple of non-white kids in the room.
Like a photograph on a cover of a college brochure.
Like a Benetton ad, right?
Right.
Right. Like whiteness is centered and there are like some other races sprinkled amongst them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, like confetti.
Like confetti.
Or, you know.
Sort of as decoration, if you will. But, so many, many white parents describe it as, well, it's a really integrated school. It's, you know, it's racially integrated. It's gender integrated. It's
everyone has their one black friend.
It's financially integrated. It's in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's an integrated environment, but it's not a majority non-white space by any. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
By any stretch of the imagination. And so that's the county. And
it doesn't really look like the demographic of the city that
exactly.
It's in.
And in fairness, as a county school, it's open to anyone in the county. And that's a more accurate reflection of the county.
Of the county, yes.
Than of the city of Ypsilanti.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas the schools that are run by Ypsilanti Community Schools are a better reflection of Ypsilanti and less a reflection of the county.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So structurally and by definition, any movement for it to be a county-run school is going to make it less reflect the Ypsilanti community. And the nut that I really want to just sort of pull open and reflect on here is this one piece, that this is an investment that the community of Ypsilanti made.
Yes.
That honestly they couldn't afford to make, but they had no choice. And now the county, who can well afford to make this investment for themselves,
right,
is taking it from them.
Yes.
And kind of muscling it away.
That's not cool.
That's just not cool. Because if they wanted to have a middle school to partner with their high school to qualify for this IB thing, which I think is a fantasy, then they could have invested the dollars and developed that middle school and made that so.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if that's true, they probably said, well, let him invest the money and then, you know, we can probably just take it away. And if it's not true, it's just, you know, sort of this thing they're trying to use to muscle it away from them.
Yeah.
So frequently people challenge me when I say that while I would easily and quickly agree that most of conservatism is rife with racism and just general fuckery, you know.
Well, I would especially swimming in it,
you know.
Especially the resurgence of nationalism and opposition and like define the religious groups they support very narrowly and exclude even other Christians. You know?
It's bizarre. So I'm quick to concede that and say that that's there, and that conservatism is deeply broken, and it needs a lot of help.
Yeah.
But that said, similar to my pro-life convictions, I'm not willing to abandon the term for myself.
Conservative.
Right. I'm not willing to jettison the term for myself, as screwed up as the term has become.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel kind of the same way about liberal, and I feel that I've left that behind because it's become a toxic mess.
But when I point out to people that liberals are pretty racist. They're pretty racist, and that it's actually a more pernicious racism.
It's structural
because it's structural
and polite
and very polite.
Yeah,
and you can't actually pin it on them. It like kind of slides
always,
off. It's like plausible deniability.
It's always a policy issue that everyone knows is the right thing to do.
Well, yeah.
But you can't define why.
Why? Yeah, it's not clear why, but this is the right thing to
do. And when you unpack it and look at who it benefits, there. Oh, look, that's why.
That's why. And so we're watching this unfold. We're watching some really fucked up liberal racism unfold right here, right now.
Yes.
It's just kind of spilling out in front of us.
Yeah.
And the black people in the situation are kind of like, whoa, hey, how is this even happening? And the white people are like, well, you know, there's plenty of room for you at the table.
Everybody knows that this is the best solution.
Right. And by the way, if you don't comply, we'll have to leave.
Yeah.
Et cetera, right?
Yeah. We'll take our money.
We'll take our money and go.
Yeah.
So I just want to refer to an article here. There's the Ypsilanti Schools is to give up control of Washtenaw International Middle Academy. And the vote took place in October, a vote 4-2, in favor of a resolution to move forward with consolidating consolidating. It's a nice sort of way of getting around the acquisition merger.
Right.
It's a consolidation.
They're turning into one thing, but we're not going to describe how.
Two schools that currently share a building. Currently, they're in the same building. Board President Sharon Lee said she and Trustee Brenda Meadows opposed the resolution, which was brought to the school board at Tuesday's special meeting. Treasurer Meredith Schindler was absent for the vote. And Lee said, I'm studying this myself. This was the first time I had seen the proposal. We didn't even get a chance to look it over and absorb it. To me, it just seems like we're giving up all the control right now. Now, the Washtenaw International High School is run by the Washtenaw Educational Options Consortium, which is a group that runs schools that aren't local schools, and they run them throughout the county.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have three high schools that they run. And the other high schools, you know, have support arrangements with them, where like students will come and take classes there and things like that. Now, and the IB, the International Baccalaureate Curriculum, is centered on student inquiry and emphasizes global awareness. Now, and again,
I should just say some of my smartest friends went to IB programs.
Right. No, they're widely recognized as strong educational programs.
Yeah.
Which is why the Ypsilanti Community Schools chose to develop a high school and elementary school.
They're basically doing an end run around No Child Left Behind standards and saying, we're going to go for something with real teeth.
Exactly. And there's a gentleman that's the board president of the Washtenaw Educational Options Consortium, Mr. Duggar, and he says the goal is to essentially maintain the program as it is in terms of being very much an Ypsilanti-based program, he said. We're really just sort of cleaning it up.
cleaning it up.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because, you know, it's kind of dirty.
Interesting wording.
Crossing the T's, dotting the I's, so we can actually combine them in a way that is efficient and makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Washtenaw board previously authorized Duggar to develop a consolidation proposal, negotiate the arrangement, and one of the school board trustees initially received the proposal in May and has been waiting on updates from the superintendent. And that's one of the trustees that's sort of a booster or sort of a rah-rah for the merger. And really for financial reasons, because they're scared and they don't want to lose the program.
Yeah.
Right. And she mentioned specifically why I could move out of Ypsilanti altogether and take the Washtenaw Middle Academy with it to start an IB middle years program somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
And that could be bad. And without their daily support, rebuilding the program couldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if it did, or when it did, it would be a very long time before they could put something back together again. And part of the consolidation plan, the county is planning to relocate Y High in Rima to Ypsilanti's West Middle School on Mansfield Street. And to be fair, Ypsilanti is a more racially integrated community than other parts of Washtenaw County.
Yes.
So anywhere in Ypsilanti is going to be it's going to be kind of the hood. But right now, it's in the hood.
Yeah. Which benefits that neighborhood.
Which benefits that neighborhood.
Yes.
Tremendously, right?
Yes.
Tremendously. And so them leaving is already it's going to be a blow to Ypsilanti neighborhood.
You're punishing the punished.
Right, already. Yeah. Day one. The proposal is to punish the neighborhood.
Yes.
Right out of the gate.
Yes.
Because they need more space. They need a bigger building, you know. I mean, there's so many kids, you know. We can't guarantee a space for these kids unless, you know. Actually, they already have a space guaranteed. I'm just saying. Yes. So part of the consolidation, there just offers more space for the IB school's growing enrollment. Other specifics of the consolidation, staffing, transportation, still being negotiated. And both entities will need to sign off on the final addendum of the agreement. And the county is very excited at this point. They can move forward. And I think it's a fantastic example of how we do things very different in this county. I think he's right on that. I think he's spot on. I think that's exactly right.
You know,
we think innovatively and we think collaboratively. And this is a great way to provide a fantastic educational option for students in Ypsilanti while partnering with the community.
Did he say colonially?
No, collaborative. Sorry. Oh,
collaboratively.
Sorry. I misspoke. That was like a Freudian slip. I'm sorry.
Imperially?
Collaboration. Like, you know, collaborators collaborating.
I see. Yeah.
With the occupying regime. Now, students in all county programs are still counted in their home district, and that determines how much state funding the school district receives. This is the 95-5 thing.
Mm-hmm.
And why I currently enroll students from all across Washington County. Each school district reserves a certain number of seats for their students for their each year. Now, the resolution passed by YCS calls for WEMA to continue enrolling mostly Ipsy students, even after it becomes a county program.
Mm-hmm.
The resolution says Ypsilanti students will account for 95% of WEMA for the next 3 years.
Oh, yeah. So it's gonna be a sunset town, basically.
What? I'm sorry. Yeah. It is, and they're planning it this way, but they're not racist or anything.
So everyone who still needs to graduate doesn't have to change.
Doesn't have to drop out.
Drop out.
So the kids that are there can actually finish, and then
they'll be replaced by white kids.
Yeah. We're not gonna like throw you out the door today.
Wow. Yeah.
Just like none of your kid, like your kid brother can't come. Just okay. Just understand.
Yeah.
That like your younger siblings can't be here. I mean, okay, you're already here. That's fine. But like no more of your people can come here.
Yes.
All right? Because, you know, we do things differently in this county. There's a way we do things here. And this isn't it.
Wow.
We need to clean this up a little bit. Now, this was always the intent. That's in the proposal. The other superintendents in the county certainly understand that. Mm-hmm. That going in, these mm-hmm. kids are going to be here, and then we're going to phase them out. We all understand that reality.
Yeah.
He also said there should be enough space at WEMA to accommodate students advancing from... There should be enough space at WEMA to accommodate students advancing from YIs. And... Students coming from YIs previously were guaranteed a seat at WEMA, but now they'll have to apply. And unless YIs classes double in the next few years, WEMA and YHI should be able to accommodate those students who want to continue. Because...
unless.
Well, first of all, they actually already have doubled.
Yes.
And seem to be on track to double.
Wasn't that the last words of the Lorax before he left? Unless.
If something happens, I don't know. It's hard to know what could happen. I mean, I can't predict the future.
Yeah.
So this is actually a textbook example of the way liberals steal wealth from black communities.
Yes. Yeah.
And so the investment that Ypsilanti made no longer belongs to Ypsilanti or its children. And liberals will wring their
little,
hands
what little
and tut-tut.
Wealth they develop.
What little tiny little
scrap. Which honestly
scrap
was
of wealth.
Developed more by the work of the people there than by
right.
the funding.
What they had. They yes. had labor. They didn't have
yes.
money.
Yes.
So they used that. And yeah. they made something. And now rich people are going to take it.
Yes.
And then tut tut, like, oh, things aren't working out over there. I wonder what's going on. Like, do you think it could be like their culture or something? I'm just wondering. Like, what could be going on?
They're not
on?
Getting along with this sudden influx of new students.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's about. That's weird.
You'll hear about the noose in the guy's locker and the, you know. The
like, who did that? That's not the kind of community we are.
Yeah.
And I don't know. If you go around stealing things from poor people, that is the kind of community you are.
Yeah.
That's exactly the kind of community you are if you steal things from poor people.
Right.
There's really no other way to like explain that or describe that. Or to understand that. And I'm sure no one at the county thinks they're stealing something from poor people.
They...
or frames that in any way like that.
They don't use those words.
No, they don't use those words.
But the fact that they feel good about it probably says a lot.
It really does.
So
it really does. So it's disgusting. It's revolting. And again, it's hard to hang a sign on this as the racism that it is, because no one said nigger.
Exactly.
No one said anything like that at all.
Yeah, no, it's...
And
it's,
these people, they never would.
It's fully a piece of structural, institutional racism.
And I think it's very telling that this is the way things are done here.
Yeah.
That, it really is.
The wording.
Right. So, you know, and I think the very closest he came to betraying the nature of what's happening here is discussing cleaning the program
cleaning it up.
Like,
yeah, successful.
Like, was it dirty? I mean, was it, if something was a mess, or was there a problem that we didn't know about?
It's kind of dark in the car.
It's a little dark in the car here, you know? Can get some lights on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
It's full of Canadians.
It's full of Canadians. Damn. Those Canadians are everywhere you go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's just an example. And if you're a liberal and maybe you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know, that doesn't seem that racist to me or whatever. I suppose I can unpack this more. I welcome your questions. I welcome your perspectives on why and how this might not be a racist thing. Or maybe
you're misunderstanding.
Yeah, maybe I'm misunderstanding completely. Maybe, in fact, actually, they built an international baccalaureate high school that couldn't get certified in any way unless they stole a middle school from somebody. Maybe that's what they did. I don't know. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the high school is considerably more integrated than I realize. Maybe, I don't know.
I wonder if we can.
I'm curious
if we can get a guest on to talk about this.
I don't know. I'm kind of mean, or people think I'm mean. Anyway. So they may not want to talk to me, but that's
yeah.
But you know, I'm not actually mean.
No, you'll be very polite.
You'll be very polite.
Yeah.
I probably won't even swear.
Offer a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we haven't figured out technically quite how we're going to do guests, but we gotta get our game together, up our game, and start having guests to talk about things like this.
And so, I know there's one thing I do want to respond to before I hear it. There's a sort of thing people are like, well, that's not like lynching a man. That's
no,
like,
it's, you know, like,
it's not like lynching a
it's
man.
It's like giving rope burns to 100 men instead.
Oh, that's so terrible. But yes, and... I think it's disingenuous to say that's not like lynching a man.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, give me your...
I mean, I think that's true, right? I'm not... It's very much like giving rope burns to 100 men instead. Mm-hmm. And then saying, well, I'm not as bad as the guy that, you know...
That lynched one of them.
That lynched one, you know? As if, like, because it's different, it's not as bad. You know, like, you're less racist. It's like racist. It's like racism light.
Racism light.
So, therefore... You shouldn't be mad about it or something. That's a kind of perverse thing all to itself.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of that. But a lot of people are like, well, because it's not an open lynching, because it's not beating a man in the street and calling him names, that's not really racism.
Yeah, just to be clear where I am, I don't just want to see programs that treat minorities equally.
Yeah, no.
I want to see programs and plans that explicitly benefit the most disadvantaged first
in line.
Yes, right. And you can say, "Well, that's affirmative action. That's, you know,
call it whatever you need.
That's
to.
That's hardly fair. That's not the American way. This is a meritocracy or whatever." No,
it's not the American
way. I want to see reparations.
I want to see reparations, actually.
Yes.
So that's part of it, but I'm addressing this other frame that, well, that's not even like racism. That's okay. Just like how politics works. And it's unfortunate, and there it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the weak tend to be on the losing end and blah, blah, blah. That's just how politics works, right?
Yes.
This is a specific thing that liberals are comfortable with and actually like because it benefits them.
Yes.
And their stock portfolios and their way of life and the way they've structured their worlds and their families.
Mm-hmm.
So you like it. You like it when the lynching happens by the police in their neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah.
And you can pretend that maybe it's because this guy was like a drug monster.
Yeah, or he didn't comply fast enough. And he should have known better.
Whatever, you know.
His parents should have taught him how to be deferential to the police.
And so on. And I use, and now it's become a liberal thing. Like, this is like in the last 3 or 4 years. It's become sort of a reflexive liberal thing to feign some kind of support for Black Lives Matter, right?
Yes.
And so you'll see less of this sort of telegraphing of this view that it's fine if the police shoot a guy in his neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. fine. That's crime prevention. That's, drugs are bad and we got to take care of that. And I'm not sure if we should legalize marijuana and all that.
Yes.
That's actually part of this, that these things are actually connected because if there's no functional school system in that neighborhood.
Yes.
There's only a few other places the kids can go.
Right.
And we've created a police state to come and preferentially police those neighborhoods. I want you to notice that in the neighborhoods where the poor people live, there are cameras at the stoplights to catch them and fine them for running a stoplight. There are no cameras in the neighborhoods where I live, in the neighborhoods right. where people with money live.
Yes.
There's not an organized ring
To steal what little they have.
To steal what little they have.
Yeah.
Those cameras are in the poor neighborhoods.
Yep.
The police presence is in the poor neighborhoods. And if the children aren't in some kind of managed environment that the community has created for them,
mm-hmm.
then they are left to tender mercies.
To all this. Yes.
To all of the police state.
Yeah.
Right? And those things are actually intimately connected. And so, in effect, when you say we're going to take your children's school that they can walk to from them, you are saying we're now going to leave your 12-year-old boys exposed to a lynching.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying.
A legal lynching.
State-sanctioned lynching.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
I mean, he was carrying an Arizona iced tea.
I know. What was I supposed to think? Right? So, but no, seriously, they are not A-B connected. Right? It's not like, therefore, there's only one thing that can happen.
Right.
But we've set up the system that works this
that
way.
That draws a line. That
and draws lines. A line this way.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And so when the community cannot create for its children any safe space, you have left those children at the mercy of the police state.
And the safe space was something that the community built.
Built. So it's not, it's even deeper and more pernicious and more ugly than just taking away their labor and their own personal investment.
And now for them to attend school, they've got to be bused. They've got to wait at bus stops. Maybe not get in.
Those friendships. Lose that social net.
Lose the social safety net they've been developing.
And that's how this works. That's how this works.
The possible job connections.
You can say to yourself that, well, this isn't like a lynching.
Access to guidance counselors, you know.
All those resources.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you can pretend to yourself that this isn't like actually like a lynching or something. No, you've just sanitized the lynching. That's all that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
It very much is. It's just been sanitized so you can stomach it and have plausible deniability about your involvement in it. And you can pretend that, oh, well, you know, it wasn't like I didn't go to the lynching. This was like a police misconduct thing, and you know, and that police officer is personally responsible for that. I mean, it's not like something I did.
Black community tries to build something up themselves because, you know, to compensate for the lack of everything.
And, you know, you just casually pull the rug out from under it and be like, "Oh, shit happens." You know, that's politics.
It's because of there's a technical requirement.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. I don't know. I'm personally of the frame of mind that if I had been on the school board, I would have been like, well, hell, take your damn school. We'll see ya.
Yeah.
Take your school. Yeah. Go on. Because, you know, why don't you guys go build a middle school for yourselves?
Yes.
You know, invest that money and build the middle school you need.
Yeah.
Have a nice day.
Yeah.
I fully understand the sort of the very real fear that people have, like, oh my God, where are we going to have send our eighth graders next year if they leave?
Right.
How are we going to even do this? I get that. And that's probably the reason I'm not on a school board somewhere.
It's, well, yeah.
It's because I would tell people to go to hell every day. But
But yeah, it is. I mean, we would be trying not to disrupt our students.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. We'd be, so, yeah, you know, we don't like to disrupt our kids.
And, you know, that's, we've seen what happens when you, right, do.
So
the preschool, we were hoping to send our kids to kindergarten.
Yeah.
Shut down.
Shut down, moved. Yeah. Well, and more than that, I was hoping to send our other soon-to-be preschools to that preschool.
To the same preschool.
The same preschool. Because I'm not...
We liked the teachers. Yeah. It was close by.
It was a great program.
It was a great program. We saw benefits in the kids' behavior and learning.
And their connections they were making with other Catholic kids,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I really wouldn't send a child to school past kindergarten. I think it's just...
child abuse.
Child abuse. But the preschool and kindergarten, yeah, programs are usually very good in a Montessori setting, and many Montessori elementary and high schools are very good, but it wasn't going to be Montessori past kindergarten there, so I was hoping to have a spot for our children that were still in the appropriate age range, yeah, and they just packed it up, moved it on, kind,
yeah,
of,
yeah.
Yeah, it was not...
It wasn't the good. Same kind of situation.
No, not by a long shot.
I mean, that parish closed, but...
The parish effectively closed. It was taken over, yeah, and merged and this and that.
But I have a liberal friend who's literally writing posts now because she's hearing from her kids about how they're constantly bullied. And yeah, she's saying, but they have a zero tolerance for bullying program. How can this happen?
Because that's what happens in school. I don't know how to explain this to you, but...
Yeah. I guess I hear that some kids don't get bullied. I hear that happens.
That happens too.
I'm really scratching my head as to how this...
It's not confusing because like, there are bulliers, there are their accomplices, and then there are the kids that get bullied. Mm-hmm. So by definition, there are some kids that aren't being bullied.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right. So...
You know, because, well, I was bullied and a bully.
Oh.
You know, because there's almost always someone
lower
on the totem pole than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, tried to make myself feel better from being beat up and tormented by tormenting other kids.
I guess people feared repercussions for beating me up or something. I don't know. But,
your father was a local person of some note.
Yeah, of some repute.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I would usually just call bullies on there. Like, hey, you want to go? I'm right here. And that usually cut it off, but I think that was actually forces outside of my control at the time.
I was always told to fight back and I had to stand up and fight with bullies. And I did. That didn't really
work out well.
Yeah, the theoretical thing is that you punch a bully in the nose once and you realize just how they realize that they can't pick on you anymore because they're actually terrified of being beaten up. I did hit bullies back. It didn't work.
Didn't work. I don't know actually that violence is really where we want to. Is really the solution we want to teach our children, right?
That was. The advice I got from every adult in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the after school specials or whatever.
I know.
So,
but there's, I don't know that I'm really looking to do a whole episode of bullying.
No.
I do want to say that there's this dynamic that we say play out in our day-to-day lives. And this is where children are trained in the dynamic. Okay.
Well, it starts at home.
It starts early. This thing we see of bullying in schools and in these certain social settings.
Yeah, how do we deal with bullying in homeschool?
Homeschool, what's that about? I don't know. It's a good question. Right. But that's that larger issue. We need to stop pretending that bullying is like some strange school thing.
Right.
It's like this social phenomenon that we have.
Well, it seems like we're seeing a large-scale version of school bullying playing out here.
We really are. Well, and there's an article I posted a little while back where they talked about sharing social capital actually seems to undercut bullying. And that's what I think is my strategy for an effective end game around it.
Sharing social capital as in an integrated community school.
For example, right?
Yeah.
And also, my personal approach as a teenager and as a middle schooler was to be confrontational and to invite people to go ahead and make good on their threats. And it did sort of take the wind out of people's sails.
Yeah.
You have to be at a certain place in the pecking order for that to work.
Right. It didn't work for me.
Right. It's not really a solution exactly, right? But this concept of social capital is that a child who is bright and vivacious and fun can be made into a social pariah simply by being the new kid that no one wants to sit
sure,
with.
Sure, sure.
That alone turns right. This child into a pariah. And then it's a self-reinforcing positive feedback loop.
Yes.
Whereas if one or two people sit with the child and welcome the child into their social circle, then...
Tongue twister. She sells, he sells.
That alone is enough to give the new child enough social capital to function, mm-hmm. right? And then to share with others and so on. But other children see and are terrified of losing their social capital by being associated with the pariah.
Yeah, I always kind of was happy to share what little social capital I have, so I would always actually seek out the losers and the...
Yeah, I know, you me know. Too. Gotta love the losers so much.
or weirdos, I guess.
Well, losers, weirdos, I mean, everyone called them losers, that's, yeah.
The people who seem more interesting than the
a hell of a lot more interesting
yes.
than the cheerleaders. But yeah. That said,
we're going to get email from angry cheerleaders.
Angry cheerleaders now, bring it. The
we welcome your hate.
Welcome your hate. It's okay. But sharing the social capital is what actually changes the dynamic. And it is people's terror about sharing social capital, about being associated with the pariah and losing social capital that could leave them on the short end of the stick for the bullying.
Yes.
Because even 9-year-olds intimately understand what's at stake here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was the most terrifying part of the article for me. Apparently, parents teach their kids not to step in if they see somebody being bullied and not to share their social capital.
Well, sure. Sure.
That's like the most horrifying thing I've ever read in my life. Honestly, it is. It's just horrifying. That the people are at home and they say this to their children. And they say things like this, like, whatever you do, you know, don't help the vulnerable.
I don't know that I remember any advice on helping or not helping the vulnerable, sticking up for the vulnerable, outside of Sunday school. But I mean, like, practical advice for dealing with school situations.
My parents were pretty explicit that if you see someone being beat down or hurt or something,
okay,
you know, help the person being hurt.
I don't know that issue ever came up because I was usually the one being
beat down. Being hurt. Yeah. Well, not just in that respect, but like my parents were very explicit about if you see something happening that's unfair.
Yeah. All right.
You got to do something about that. Even if it's just to call it out, you have to do something. That you have a personal and a moral responsibility to do something about that.
But this didn't.
Then like, that was explicit.
Become your lifelong values, right?
It's just what my parents said. You know, this is some random stuff my parents said. Yeah, for example, right? But so it was always obvious to me that if someone was like being left out for no reason or for, I don't know, because they were ugly or whatever it was, that, you know, they have a ride with me. You know, they have a seat with me. They have a place at my table. And if someone was being picked on, somebody needed to say something, I would say something. And if teachers, and actually this is why I kept getting into it with my teacher, my first freshman year biology teacher, is there were kids that she would kind of pick on and make fun of. And I also, a middle school social studies teacher, would pick on people. I'd say, you know, it's not nice to call people names. And she would be really mad about that. I would say, you know, it's not nice to call people names. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. And then you'd wind up in detention.
Then I'd wind up in detention, right? And
truth to power.
Truth to power. So that kind of thing was something my parents explicitly taught me, and I understood that other students might be afraid to say something.
Yeah.
I just thought they weren't saying things because they weren't afraid. I had no idea their parents had told them not to say anything. And I'm like, sure, okay, you know, maybe you're afraid to say something and maybe you don't want to go to detention and maybe you don't want the consequences of saying something.
Yeah.
I totally understand that. I get that. But it had never occurred to me until I read this article here in my 40s that maybe people were at home telling their kids not to help someone in trouble.
Don't
help each other.
Don't get involved.
Don't get involved. Whatever you have. No. Just stand back, you know.
Yeah.
Well, just let them punch that kid. Don't do anything. What?
Well, that's certainly what it felt like growing up. So that must have been there somewhere.
So apparently, I feel kind of almost like naive and childish to not have realized this, right? But I'd always just assumed that people were acting from their fear.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to share that article in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So in case no one's mentioned it to you, if you see someone being hurt, you're supposed to do something.
You're supposed to stand up for them.
You're supposed to stand up for them. That's actually
If you see
job.
Someone taking away a kid's lunch money or maybe their entire school,
you should say something.
You should say something.
You should say something. Yeah.
Okay.
Next.
I have another book that I finished that I want to talk about.
Yay.
At some length.
Paul wants to talk about a book at length? Wait a minute. That's
What's
weird.
What's going on? We got to get to the bottom of this. We got to put a stop to this until we can figure out what's going on.
What's happening here? What book is this?
This is a book. Hang on. This is a book I mentioned starting with the kids to read as a bedtime story.
Oh, yeah.
This is, so it's a bit of a change of pace, you might say, but maybe it's not much as one as it seems superficially. This is T.H. White's The Sword in the Stone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That
so good. It is a story of Wart, who, spoiler, becomes King Arthur. This is an important book from my childhood. There are a few books from my childhood that I remember as being really formative. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. It's filled with anachronisms. It's hilarious, muddled, confused. There's even, it lampshades all these things. It's almost like a series of sketches that often veer into high comedy or low comedy.
A lot of low comedy.
Yeah. And so there's a scene where Merlin is arguing with whatever like spirit actually implements his magic and gives him things. So he has the ability to like demand things and they're handed to him out of thin air, right? So he has some kind of a spiritual creature or something that's like working for him, trying to implement his demands. And there's a scene where he's trying to get his hat and he winds up with all these different hats.
Every hat.
Saying, no, the other hat. And he gets like a sailor hat. And they're all from the wrong time periods.
Right.
And so he actually says, you know what this is? This is an anachronism. This is a bloody anachronism. And it's like lampshading everything about how strange this is.
Right.
Merlin lives backwards. So he's getting younger, I guess.
And will one day be an infant.
But he like, it's very confusing. It's inherently confusing.
Yeah.
But he gets younger, but he experiences, so on the day he meets Arthur, he's like, well, I guess we can say goodbye.
Yep.
And then, you know, but he also knows, he also has foresight and hindsight, and like foresight instead of hindsight. So he knows, he understands
that he's training King Arthur.
Yeah. And he understands that his future self in his timeline was the person that took the young infant Arthur away from Uther Pendragon and hid him at the castle of the Forest Sauvage under the, as his foster father, King Ector.
Right.
And the foster brother, Kay. Mm-hmm. Right. So he like knows things that it you know, you have to like draw diagrams to figure out what's happening.
Yeah, and I should say I spent months and years poring over Greek and Roman myths and fantasies and tales and legends and American tales and American legends with my parents I mean, just at length.
Yeah.
The only English literature that we really did as a family was Beowulf. So I'm actually not that.
You're new to this.
I mean, I've heard of King Arthur, right?
Yeah.
The Round Table. I've heard of, like, the mythology, but I never read it.
You do the Norse myths?
Only in passing.
Okay, because I was, you know, go figure, look at me in the mirror. But, like, I was really into the Norse myths.
The Norse myths,
yeah. I did study the Greek myths and all that on my own, but I became particularly fascinated by American folklore, by Paul Bunyan, mm-hmm. and also by the Norse myths. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of reading of the Norse myths now, too.
It's good stuff.
Anyway, so I wanted to be Merlin when I grew up, honestly.
Oh, really?
So yeah. He was my hero. He's paradoxical. He says that he has been given just enough magic to help with Wart's education, so he's not allowed to turn Kay into things. Mm-hmm. So to explain, he turns Wart into various animals so that he has an experience of a different culture, a different species.
And different political paradigms.
That's what's so fascinating about it. Wart is, but it's kind of paradoxical because Wart is getting this special education because of who he will one day become.
Right.
But he presumably will one day become this person, at least we think for a while, because he's getting this special education. Right.
Wait a minute. So which caused which?
Right, exactly. So it's like a causation paradox where something comes out of nowhere, which is a lot of time travel stories feature that kind of thing. But Wart becomes king actually because Merlin, traveling backwards in time, ensures that he will be king, but we eventually learn that he is the biological son of
Uther Pendragon,
right? So this is kind of ultimately like a, I guess biology is destiny after all, you know, divine right of kings, sort of the hierarchy is engraved in blood, you know, the, story, which is like, okay, you can... But that's Harry Potter is too to some extent, yes, right? Is. And so
it's a British thing. It's really
it's a British
deeply
thing.
Embedded in the
it's
culture.
Deeply embedded. In, yeah, exactly. And I love authors who subvert that.
Right.
China Mieville, a Marxist science fiction writer, literally a Marxist science fiction writer, subverts that big time, and it's great. But I still grew up loving this story. So.
Yeah.
White, meanwhile, he subverts this in many ways, partly with all these anachronisms. So a lot of places, the story is about different classes bumping against each other and living together. Mm-hmm. And in a broader culture, his version of the medieval rural life, where there's a place for everyone.
Yeah.
And everyone is supported to one degree or another, by this system.
By the system, right.
Now, it's a little rose-colored glasses, but but we believe that, you know, we work harder than the peasants did, honestly.
Yeah, we do.
I'm not going to mourn the fact that I have dental care.
No.
And I didn't die of tooth decay when I was 10 years old.
That was nice.
Yeah. But, you know, even the very debased and degraded people... the crazy people, you know, they live with the dogs.
They live with the dogs. They had some place to be.
They had a job,
yeah.
You know, that they could do. So yeah, there are some great things about this book. King Pellinore is one of the funniest minor characters in the history of literature. I really believe that. And he is played up in the adaptation of this book, which was Camelot.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Or part of it. Mm-hmm. So there's a speech by Merlin that really shaped my outlook on life. I like glommed onto this. I was probably in sixth grade or so, and I have to read this speech.
Yeah, let's hear it.
We hear the kids making noise upstairs.
Like, are they having like a, it sounds like they're having.
A riot?
A riot in Veronica's room.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. This is a quiet riot.
Quiet riot. I saw them perform, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah.
You're bringing back bad memories.
Bad memories.
The best thing for being sad, replied Merlin, beginning to puff and blow. So he's always deflating his pomposity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is to learn something. That is the only thing that never fails. You may grow old and trembling in your anatomies. You may lie awake at night listening to the disorder of your veins. You may miss your only love. You may see the world about you devastated by evil lunatics. Or know your honor trampled in the sewers of baser minds. There is only one thing for it, then, to learn. Learn why the world wags and what wags it. That is the only thing which the mind can never exhaust, never alienate, never be tortured by, never fear or distrust, and never dream of regretting. Learning is the thing for you. Look at what a lot of things there are to learn. Pure science, the only purity there is. You can learn astronomy in a lifetime, natural history in 3, literature in 6. And then after you have exhausted a milliard lifetimes in biology and medicine and theocriticism and geography and history and economics, why, you can start to make a cartwheel out of the appropriate wood or spend 50 years learning to begin to learn to beat your adversary at fencing. After that, you can start again on mathematics until it is time to learn to plow. Mm. So that really hit home for me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to spend a million lifetimes learning everything there was. It like clicked into my mind. It said summaries as, yes, that's who I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, saying science, the only pure thing there is.
Yeah, it's very 50s.
You can pick that apart, that there's an ideology behind his mm-hmm. his words.
Well, he's got a very clear ideology in this book, right?
Yeah.
And it's very American. It's very mid-20th century. And it's like, you know, his handprints are all over the page, all over the book, right? But some things are timeless and good.
Yes.
Yeah, some things are just timeless and good, regardless of where they came from.
There's a story that also stuck with me. A character, a badger, tells young Arthur, who has turned into a badger as well, mm-hmm. About a paper he's writing. And it's a parable about how all the embryos mm-hmm. came before God on the last day of creation, or day before the last day. And they lined up to ask God to shape them, mm-hmm. and they could decide what kind of bodies they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so most of the creatures that came, all the creatures started out looking like plain kind of embryos, right? He describes them as their little nodding heads and their arms folded over their bellies.
Right.
Right. Little distended bellies and nodding heads. They came before God and said, here's what we'd like to be. And God said, the only rule is once you've decided, there's no take backs.
No take backs.
And so the creatures became highly specialized. He describes a frog that lives in the desert who traded their entire body for blotting paper, right? They everything about their physiology is designed to soak up water and mm-hmm. keep it so they can live in this dry environment. Okay. Talks about the badger that got like rakes for hands, you mm-hmm. know, and how all these creatures specialize. They develop, like, they got scissors for hands, they got like swords for arms, they got jaws that could crush and bite and whatnot. And man is the last. And man says, I'm not going to read the actual text, but man says, actually, we may be really stupid for saying this, but we think that maybe you have a plan for us, and we would like to stay exactly as we are. And the idea is that the idea is that humans have basically retained their unspecialization. Right. Their lack of specialization. Mm-hmm. Now, and God says, congratulations, you figured it out. As a result, we're going to give you dominion over all these creatures. Mm-hmm. And if you need something, some tool, you know,
it's here.
If you need to swim, if you need to fly, if you need to dig, if you need to shoot, if you need any of these things, you have what it takes to build those things.
Right.
But what you're really specialized in is your mind, is your Your intellect.
Your intellect.
Yeah, so, yeah. To me, this was like absolutely fascinating, and it's sort of a short version of ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, mm-hmm. which was a scientific idea years ago. Yeah. Now, it's not true, right? Humans are specialized.
Highly specialized.
Yes. But it is true that embryos look alike, and one can imagine, following the ontology recapitulates phylogeny argument, that a lot of animals do specialize, and humans do seem superficially like they don't.
Don't seem to have any special skill.
Right. And it is true that we are lacking a lot of tools in our own body, right? That other animals have to survive. We're not very...
Not very ferocious.
We're not very ferocious. We're not very good at, say, up against a mountain lion.
Right. No claws, no teeth.
So...
Kind of weak.
Kind of weak. This may yet be our downfall, but it's an interesting... Again, it's also some kind of great chain of being bullshit, you know? Mm-hmm. But it really was a neat...
It also seems terrible. Needlessly theological and full of theological holes. But yeah.
Yeah, well, he was that. Okay, I'm going to read another little passage here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Page 216. This passage illustrates part of White's style that I really like. And it's called, it's a style called bathos, mm-hmm. where you interrupt your writing with what can be dramatic changes of tone from high to low, or vice versa.
Low to high, for comic effect.
For comic effect. Wart lay on his back, with his bare skin half off him, and his hands clasped behind his head. It was too beautiful to sleep, too temperate for the rug. He watched out at the stars in a kind of trance. Soon it would be the summer again, when he could sleep on the battlements and watch these stars hovering as close as moths above his face. And in the Milky Way, at least, with something of the mothy pollen. They would be at the same time so distant that unutterable thoughts of space and eternity would baffle themselves in his sighing breast, and he would imagine to himself how he was falling upward higher and higher among them, never reaching, never ending, leaving and losing everything in the tranquil speed of space. He was fast asleep when Archimedes came for him. "Eat this," said the owl, and handed him a dead mouse. Right. That's an example of one of White's like turns.
Turns, like.
So in his writing, there are these epiphanies that really rival anything I read in Joyce, right?
Wow,
that are just gorgeous, right. And also absolute comedy. Mm-hmm. He parodies songs, he parodies rhymes and verses in popular culture. Mm-hmm. He totally mixes up his timelines. There's no coherent time in medieval history when this story takes place.
No.
He mixes up, you know, like different royal dynasties and all this.
Yeah.
Houses.
It's a chronological mess. And I think that's intentional.
It's intentional. He's like his British school kid who like threw all his notes up in the air and they all came down in a heap, and then he rebuilt the story of King Arthur out of all this plus all his popular culture and songs. Right. And
I mentioned a while ago that he seems very American. Was he like a big Yank sympathizer or something?
I think he did spend time in the U.S. I want to find more of his writings because I've only read The Sword and the Stone. I've read The Once and Future King and The Book mm-hmm. of Merlin. Mm-hmm. I have another novel by his, but I think there's also some nonfiction that I'd like to look at.
Yeah, because he seems like a Yankophile to me.
Yes. Yeah, like an Alexis de Tocqueville kind of...
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of personage. To summarize, I mean, basically, it's superficially a coming-of-age story. There's not a lot of pathos in it. Mm-mm. We do get to know this character, and every once in a while we see that he's sad or struggling or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's not very, like, it's not in your face. You know, you don't like struggle with him. Superficially, Building's Roman, but it's also very silly. It's subversive. It's about communism and socialism and all these different cultures and societies that Wart gets stuck into.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually that subversive.
It mixes up these beautiful passages with low humor, songs, parodies, anachronism, accents, a very eclectic vocabulary, mixes in a lot of Middle English vocabulary without explaining it ever, right?
Just throws it out there.
So I've had to get onto like into my Middle English dictionary to understand some of these terms from Old French, right?
Right.
This remains one of my favorite books. I'm going to try and reread The Once and Future King to see how that holds up, but that's not a children's story. I mean, the actual story of King Arthur, his whole legend, is filled with violence and adultery, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of awful.
Yeah. So
not for kids.
That part's not for kids, but this remains an interesting kid's story. Mm-hmm. So, and it really was a book that touched and moved me. So there it is.
And our kids enjoyed it.
Our kids did enjoy it. They especially enjoy it when I acted out.
Yes. Well, actually, the boys enjoyed
it. Like and Pelennor fighting.
Yes, the boys really loved it.
Because at one point I was running around the room, tripping over things, bellowing, you know.
Yes, I recall
so
that
was pretty funny. Okay, so more books upcoming and in progress. I'm reading a small book called Demagoguery and Democracy by Patricia Roberts Miller. This is a very, very short book. It's really just a very small book. It's small form. It's really just a small essay, but it's quite interesting. I'm reading Listen Liberal by Thomas Frank. I'm about a third of the way through that. I'm reading The Reactionary Mind, second edition, Conservatism from Edmund Burke to Donald Trump, a book of essays by Corey Robin. And we're for bedtime story, we're reading the unabridged, unexpurgated Peter Pan, which I have to say is much, much stranger than I remember.
It's really weird.
It reads like, it's much darker too. It reads like something by William Hope Hodgson.
It's very dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never understood it as a, I mean, it's clearly a dark story,
You're realizing now that you've never read the original.
Yeah.
You only read like...
Abridgments,
adaptations. Yeah.
And it does come off as a dark story, and you can see that in it. Like just in the main point of the plot, right?
Yeah.
But it's dark and perverse and a little bit disturbing, actually.
Yeah, and we're only in the first chapter.
Right, we already finished the first chapter.
I don't know if the kids are going to put up with this. It may be too.
Well, I think the infant and the 4-year-old might.
Yeah, bow out.
Yeah. But the older kids, I think, are there for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to wind up this segment on...
What you reading?
You got anything you've been reading?
Nothing new. No, it takes me so long to read.
You read slowly, but you read the grind exceedingly fine.
Well, yeah, I understand everything I read by the time I'm done.
By the time you're done, but you do read much slower than you do. But I admire how thoroughly you practically have a book memorized by the time you're done with it. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll come back and do some more segments today if we can and get up what we can.
Yeah, it's the first Sunday of Advent, so there's a lot going on.
Okay, take care, everyone.
All right, till next time.